12th District State Senator Brad Hawkins is on the line with us right now. He's going to talk to us about the legislative sessions for 2021. They just wrapped up. Legislators adjourning on Sunday from those historic sessions. We'll find out more information from Brad on a couple of different fronts about his feelings regarding how they went for this year. And Brad, always good to chat. How are you?
Good morning, Chris. Great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So we're adjourned, and that's good news. I know toward the end of last week, and when we chatted with you, we were talking about the possibility of a special session, but that didn't happen. So lawmakers got out on time. There were a few things, of course, that happened down the home stretch of the sessions that I think we should bring folks up to speed on first, I guess. So what about those 11th hour items that the legislature attended to before the session actually wrapped up on Sunday? What were the highlights?
Well, it was a big push to get the budgets done. The Senate and House Democrats did not release their final negotiated operating budget until the final hours of the session, which jammed us up a little bit. I think they were trying to avoid maybe an opportunity for review and significant criticism. It came out as a conference report, which means that, and according to our rules, there couldn't be amendments anyway. So we weren't necessarily concerned about amendments on the operating budget, but that was a budget that I just could not approve and support. It proposes to spend $59.2 billion over the next 2 years. That's a significant increase over the $54 billion two-year budget that we're currently operating under. It includes the capital gains tax, which did pass by one vote on the final day of session. So the budget includes that. It spends all the rainy day reserve account, and it also spends all the additional revenue growth that was projected in the most recent, very positive revenue forecast. And by the way, on that capital gains income tax, it went over to the House without an emergency clause, which I can explain that in a bit. But when it came back to the Senate for final approval and consideration, the House had inserted what's called an emergency clause, which means when the governor signs a bill, it immediately becomes law rather than the 90-day waiting period that most bills are accustomed to between the time the governor signs it and the bill becomes law. And so that was really hard fought, and we can discuss the ramifications of what that means with the House of Representatives inserting an emergency clause into that capital gains bill. But that was part of the budget, and ultimately the budget did get approved, and we did adjourn the session. There were two other budgets as well, and obviously we could talk about those, plus some other major pieces of legislation that also got approved. So there was a lot that was wrapped into those final days.
Sounds like it, Brad. And it sounds like there's been, more use of those emergency powers, or at least some of those emergency clauses, over the course of the COVID sessions than maybe we are typically used to seeing. So does that kind of weigh into the big debate about that really never got fully addressed? I guess it was brought up, but, governor's emergency powers were never actually dealt with, or nothing happened to them, actually. So do you feel like that was kind of a part of that schematic a little bit?
Well, that not addressing the emergency powers reform in the state of Washington, not updating the really old and that now we know with the COVID pandemic, an outdated emergency power statute in our state. We tried to bring that up multiple times to force it to a vote, and the Senate Democrats just wouldn't do it. And I think, Governor Inslee came out a few days before the session adjourned and just said basically he doesn't see a need to do that. And so obviously, that would have taken up a lot of floor time, and it's unclear whether the Governor Inslee would even sign that into law. That was a disappointment. But, back to the capital gains income tax, the insertion of an emergency clause allowing the capital gains income tax bill to become law immediately upon the governor's signature is problematic because it is, in a sense, a way to circumvent the will and the voice of the voters, because we do have a process in our state constitution, a referendum process, where any bill that passes the legislature can be subject to a citizen referendum if it gains enough votes. It can go to a statewide vote at the next general election. And that's a little bit different than a citizen initiative process, which, as you probably know, Chris, that is originated entirely outside the legislature by the citizens gathering signatures and putting essentially an item on the ballot for statewide consideration. A referendum, if there's enough signatures after the bill passes, could go to the voters for an up or down vote, much like that comprehensive sex education bill did just a year ago. But because that emergency clause was added to the capital gains income tax, it essentially does not have that opportunity. So the people who are concerned about the new capital gains income tax, it would basically be left to a court challenge by the state, to the state Supreme Court, to challenge its constitutionality. So that's kind of the only remaining checkpoint there for that law once it's signed by the governor.
12th District State Senator Brad Hawkins with us today here on the Coho Morning Show, talking to us about the 2021 legislative sessions, which adjourned on Sunday. Yeah, Brad, that kind of is the most worrisome part of the whole proceedings for me, being quite nonpartisan myself as far as, a side of the aisle is concerned. It's very troubling to me to see that there are sort of these, I mean, they almost seem sneaky in a way to me. They almost kind of seem like they're kind of underhanded in some ways. I understand why emergency clauses would be necessary in times of crisis where you'd need to immediately pass legislation. But, having that, as you mentioned, circumvent the authority of the people of Washington, because after all, that's who the governor serves. That's who you serve. That's who everybody serves. You're our employees, basically, and the will of the people needs to stand in Washington State. So taking that ability out of their hands, I mean, essentially, if lawmakers do something that then the population in general just says, whoa, we don't like that. We want to get a referendum, or we want to go to the means that are necessary to be able to overturn that or change that, to be able to just bypass that. That seems very mothery to me, I mean, to put it mildly. And I'm not sure I appreciate it.
Especially when it's not an emergency. I mean, yeah. For example, the coronavirus COVID relief package that the legislature passed in the final days of last year's legislative session, as the pandemic was breaking out, and we wanted to make sure local health districts and local governments, and we had authority to spend money on testing and all these things, we added an emergency clause to that bill for good reason. I mean, the emergency clauses exist as a legislative tool for good reason, and it shouldn't be abused. And in this case, the capital gains income tax, I mean, to collect the revenue from the capital gains tax is going to take a number of months, is actually expected to be implemented over actually a couple years when it's first implemented. The state has surprisingly strong revenue, even despite the COVID pandemic, and we have the extra rainy day fund reserve account. So the capital gains tax policy, whether you agree with it or not, I think we could all agree it's not an emergency. So utilizing that emergency clause element to it was basically intended to circumvent the opportunity for a citizen referendum, which to me is very disappointing. If you support a policy, and again, I don't support this one, but other people in our district do, good people can disagree. But having something this significant should be an opportunity for a statewide voter, a voice in this process. And if you believe in the bill, and you it should be able to stand on its merits through a statewide vote. So that whole process with the operating budget was disappointing. Although I should say the two other budgets, the transportation budget and the capital budget, were very bipartisan. I supported both of those budgets, and there's a lot of good things for our district and for our state in those two budgets. So in some ways, we came together during this remote session, this hybrid process, to produce some very good bipartisan work during challenging times. And in other ways, those strong, deep philosophical differences and that the political divide very much exists, not just with the high spending, the record spending and the operating budget, with the capital gains income tax. There were fierce debates about the carbon cap and trade bill, which did eventually pass. There was a strong, lengthy debate about the low carbon fuel bill, which aims to reduce the carbon intensity in fuels, which some people believe will significantly increase gas prices. That also narrowly passed. You and I have talked in weeks past about some of the law enforcement police reforms in the legislature trying to strike a balance there. Most of those also passed. Landlord-tenant reforms and some of these other things. Most of the policies, I should say, are really being dominated by Western Washington, Seattle sort of dynamics and politics, which is, again, is what many people expect. But this year, it seemed even more so to be the case. What did not pass, Chris, was a new transportation investment package, which would have 16 years of projects with a corresponding list of gas tax increases and other fees that would generate revenue to pay for those. And we got close enough that the governor actually indicated, you know, we talked about a special session, and you mentioned it earlier in this interview. The governor has actually said, if we can gain support for this new 16-year transportation investment package in our state, then he might even call us back into a special session, perhaps in the fall, to pass that before we return next January for the regular 2022 legislative session. So there's still some things percolating out there as we enter the interim.
It sounds like it's a session that, again, Brad, was pretty... it moved things down the road. It was progressive in a lot of ways, as you talked about, even on an unprecedented level in some regards, especially as to how it was actually held. But again, there's still some question marks out there as well, and some more business to do. And that's why we'll look forward to, again, getting a chat with you on a monthly level from here. And I'll, again, look forward to our next go around. Brad, is there anything else that we haven't really discussed today or touched on that you feel is like really is important for folks to know here in the 12th District in particular that's part of the sessions or was a part of the sessions this year?
Well, probably not for this interview, but I do appreciate the chance to connect with you each month in the interim months to kind of do a little deeper dive or have a continued conversation. I will be sending out an email update here in a day or two with a full recap of the things we just talked about, including detailed information about the capital budget and the 12th district projects that are included in that, which many of us are very excited about, as well as the transportation budget and information about the operating budget and the other bills that we had a chance to cover. So for the Coho listeners, watch out for that. I'll send that out soon. And then, Chris, I look forward to keeping our conversations flowing over the next several months.
As do I, Brad. Again, appreciate the time throughout the legislative sessions. And again, I'll look forward to our next go around here in about a month or so. Until then, stay well, and we'll talk soon.
Likewise, Chris. Thanks so much.